So, next case for argument is Davis v. Cook County. Ms. Murchison.
Good morning, Justices Flom, Posner, and Woods.
Just judges.
Judges. My name is Denise Murchison. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Tanya Davis. This case is about an ER nurse for Cook County Hospital, also known as John Stroger Hospital. It was a three-count amended complaint. It was dismissed on a motion for summary judgment. We're here today to ask the court to kindly review the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-movement, that is Tanya Davis. It was a three-count complaint. We're not here on count one, which was perceived disability in violation of the Americans with Disability Act. But I am here to contest the dismissal of count two, which was 42 U.S.C. 1983, a First Amendment claim, and count three, which was defamation, which the lower court, the trial court, declined to take to rule on.
Ms. Murchison, I mean, I'll just do them consecutively. My problem with your argument on count two is, in a word, Garcetti against Sabalos. I just don't see how it survives that. And on count three, it's well established under 1367 that district courts have the discretion to dismiss without prejudice supplemental claims when a case particularly, actually they have discretion, period, but they are particularly encouraged to exercise it for dismissal when the case is resolved in an early stage, as this was. And it's a dismissal without prejudice. So I just have trouble seeing where there's reversible error on either of those points.
Well, let me start with count two, which is the First Amendment claim. Before I get to Garcetti, I'd like to go through the initial test. And the initial test which Tanya Davis meets is her conduct was constitutionally protected.
And well, but she's speaking as an employee here. I mean, I don't know that you can jump over Garcetti and go back to Connick and Pickering and all the earlier cases, because Garcetti, at the very outset, defines when someone is speaking as a citizen and when someone is speaking as an employee. And her speech is all about her responsibilities as a nurse at Stroger Hospital.
My reading of Garcetti is this, that you are to read what the employment duties of that particular public employee is. And in the record, it outlines exactly what her duties are as an ER nurse, and that is to take care of patients and to be a patient advocate. What does she complain about? She complains about poor ER conditions. But also in the April 5th memo, which the trial court even declined to even consider in its analysis, and which is why we're here to ask you to consider the April 5th memo, not only does she complain about poor working conditions.
Which you have to agree, that's out under Garcetti. Poor working conditions, that's a classic. I think that probably would have been out even under Connick. It's a particularized complaint about her working conditions. And, of course, the public has an interest in well-functioning hospitals and police departments and all the rest, but there are so many cases that say these are more particularized employee complaints.
She also complains about doctor misconduct, Your Honor. And even in Garcetti, if it's an issue of misconduct, it can be considered. It jumps over
the
First Amendment
bar. What about Spiegel against Hull? Our second decision in Spiegel against Hull is precisely an employee complaining about misconduct on the part of her superiors at the prison, and we said Garcetti bars it. I mean, maybe we were wrong. I don't know. But that's what's out there right now.
Well, I would ask the Seventh Circuit to reconsider that decision, because I believe that the justices of the Supreme Court, which we're going to defer to that ruling, wants us to look at misconduct by everyone in the. If you've got criminal conduct, which is what this particular individual is complaining about, she's not only talking about her own personal grievance where she was threatened by a doctor and said, let's step out in the parking lot. She's saying in her letter that she has other letters of misconduct by physicians. That's what she gave to her supervisor, who then decides she must be out of her mind and she must take a physical fitness exam. So this takes it outside of Garcetti when an employee complains about what's tantamount to criminal conduct.
Wasn't that what Garcetti was lying about? I don't think you have to be complaining about the personal grievance exception. That was under the old law. Now, you know, if you're speaking within the scope of your employment, then like reporting to your superiors that there are other, that there's misconduct in the workplace, then isn't that excluded?
Well, she's going outside of her role as a nurse. She's collecting complaints from other individuals.
Ms. Murchison, did this nurse have any administrative responsibilities?
Yes, she was a charged nurse, too. So she's responsible for supervising the other nurses.
And does this speak to her supervision of those nurses? Is this one of her workplace responsibilities?
One of her worst, well... She's not a union steward. We're not making that complaint. But it's definitely her role as a charge to nurse to manage the other nurses.
Let me suggest...
It's not, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say it's not her role to bring up criminal complaints or criminal activity of other individuals, such as the doctors at John Stroger Hospital. That's not her job. So she's speaking as a citizen in that respect.
What I was going to say is I think what the Supreme Court is trying to do in Garcetti, as I understand it anyway, is to say that public employers in their capacity as employers should be in a more comparable situation to private employers. There are many laws that protect whistleblowers. There are laws that protect against all manner of discrimination. But the First Amendment only applies to public employers. And the court, I think, is trying to say when somebody's speaking within the scope of their employment, you shouldn't bring in the First Amendment. It doesn't deprive people in the position of your client of other kinds of avenues. And in fact, she availed herself of some of those. She availed herself of complaint mechanisms and the like. But I see it as kind of saying, let's take the First Amendment out of this particular area when somebody is acting within the scope of their employment.
Well, I can only renew my argument and my encouragement to this court that you look at the facts in this particular case where you have a person who is charged with, of course, patient safety, but she's going beyond her role as a patient advocate, and she's complaining about activities that cross the line, which is tantamount to criminal activity on the part of the physicians who work in that particular ER. I don't know if I'm out of time, and I have time.
You have your rebuttal time left, so if you want to save that.
Hey, thank you, Ms. Murchison. Mr. Jacobs?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Michael Jacobs. I represent the county and Nurse Perzlicki in this matter. I'll start with count three. As simply stated, unless there is a showing of abuse of the court's discretion, there is no reason to overturn that charge. And you look to situations where significant judicial resources have been used, or a situation where the individual will be precluded from going back to state court. My understanding of Illinois law, the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure, is that once this matter is concluded here, if it's returned favorable for the defense in this case, there would be nothing to preclude Ms. Murchison or Ms. Davis from taking the matter back to state court. So,
do you happen to know if Illinois tolls the statute of limitations through the period of time that an appeal like this is pending?
Yes, and that's pursuant to the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure. I do not have the exact site with
but
me, though.
There's tolling. Okay.
Yes. With regard to the defamation claim, I think if you look back, I think the points have already been made significantly. You look to whether the statements were made pursuant to one's official duties. And I think both the decisions that have come out of this court recently speak volumes as to what those official duties are. You have the Spiegel case and the Sigworth case. In both those cases, in Sigworth, we had the matter of the police officer who wanted to point out some corruption within the department. And his attempts to speak out on that were deemed to be within his official duties. In the matter of Spiegla, she wished to report potential security breaches at the downstate prison, and that was speech that was determined to be within her specific duties. I think when we step back and take a look at Ms. Davis's speech, I don't think it rises to that level. It appears, as Your Honors have already stated, it does appear to be more individualized grievance as to a problem, as to some legal issue out there. Yes, she's making complaints about the staff. Yes, she has some beefs with the doctors and the way they have treated her. However, it does not appear that those are truly public concerns. Yes, they may be public concerns in the abstract sense, but however, they are really personalized issues involving what has affected her and her feelings in the workplace. I think when you look at that in general, this does not even rise to the level of the Connick standard. I think that Your Honors could affirm this decision, affirm this district court based upon the Connick standard. And I think if you even go back to the Pickering standard to talk about what suffices as public speech, when you look at the manner that Ms. Davis chose to bring about her speech, when you go back to Pickering, this gentleman did have speech that went outside of his normal course, his normal chain of command. He brought up issues to the newspapers through editorials. One case that I did not cite, but it was a recent decision, was the Fairley decision. In that case, the matter was reversed from the district court finding because the speech involved there was clearly outside of the jail guard's duties. Those guards were penalized, apparently, for giving deposition testimony, and I believe the court found that there, in no shape or form, was deposition testimony within their scope of their regular employment. So I think when you look at all the factors in total, you see a matter where Ms. Davis was within her purview of her job. She was speaking pursuant to her job and the specific conditions as they affected her. So based upon that, she neither passes Garcetti, Pickering, or Connick. Unless Your Honors have any questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Ms. Murchison, how much time does she have? 3 minutes?
Yeah, I just want to address count three, which is the defamation count. Yes, the courts have the discretion whether or not they're going to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the defamation claim. But considering the expense that was went through in litigating this case on the trial court letter, all the depositions that were taken, in the record there's all the evidence that there is defamation, the false statement, the publication to the other employees that Ms. Davis was crazy and there were problems supervising her subordinates after that. And therefore, the damage to her reputation and the proximate cause was the ordering of the fitness for duty exam. We would ask that in this particular instance that the court remand the case along with count three and exercise jurisdiction over court three in the interest of judicial economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murchison and Mr. Jacobs.